This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Welcome back. I hope you had a nice, quiet, relaxing, and uneventful time away.
Yes, completely, completely. Yeah.
And it
yeah.
leaves us with very little to talk about, really. So,
wow. Yeah.
I don't know where we're going to start, but I do want to start with this incident. I mean, it seems like a world away when on Thursday I spoke to Paul about Yom HaTzmaut and the fires that were raging, which have now been brought under control, thankfully, even though quite a lot of damage was done. Miraculously, people weren't severely injured. That was just something which is really miraculous. But since then, we've had this incident in Malta with the flotilla boat being attacked, we are untold, by people who think they know, that this was an Israeli drone that attacked a boat just off the coast of Malta. And then I saw a report which tracked an Israeli Air Force Hercules plane landing in Valletta in Malta around the time that this drone was reported to have attacked a flotilla boat that was planning to come to Gaza to break the blockade in Gaza. Why they don't say we're bringing boats to bring the hostages out of Gaza, I don't know. But what I really loved about this attack of the flotilla, and if indeed it was an Israeli drone, then all credit needs to go, because the boat was damaged beyond repair, that there's no possible way that that boat is going to sail to Gaza or to sail anywhere. And nobody was injured. Nobody was injured in this incident, even though this is a boat that was off the coast, that was damaged, that could have sunk right away. If there were people on board, they might have drowned, or who knows what, the drone itself might have injured people. And yet nobody was injured, no reports of injury other than damage to the boat. I wonder to what extent the Maltese government knew that Israel was going to do this. If an Air Force plane landed in Valletta, what cooperation was there with the government of Malta? Is it true that Western governments have started to realize that the so-called pro-Palestinian crowd, who present themselves as very anti-Israeli, which of course they are, but they also are anti-Western? And we see that more and more now, especially around the US, where the Trump government has really clamped down on these people, saying, you know, protesters who shout death to Israel, death to America, jump on the American flag, are really not welcome in America if that's what they're screaming. I mean, their pretext might be supposedly pro-Palestinian, but once they start, you know, denouncing the West in general, and especially the country which hosts them, then one has to wonder why countries tolerate having people like that there. And potentially, hopefully, the Maltese government has realized that, and therefore been willing to cooperate with Israel to carry out this attack. But anyway, it was very, very effective. And it kind of was a one-day news item. I think a great story. And it went away, which is exactly what you want. And I suppose we'll park it there, because one or two other things have happened since then.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Israeli government's response, or threatened response, to the Houthis following that missile, and Iran, actually, following that missile that fell very near to Ben Gurion Airport yesterday.
And I hear that I understand that it's still ringing in your ears.
It certainly is. Well, you know, especially because, and I was telling listeners earlier, the missile hit when I was on the that air passage, whatever it's called. I never can remember the name. It's the strangest thing.
Air bridge. They sometimes call it an air bridge or a sleeve. Yeah.
Right. So they were screaming, disembark now. And everybody was just grabbing. Thankfully, not a lot of people had boarded yet. So it was fairly easy to just run. But it was during that, when I was on that air bridge, where the massive explosion hit. And in my mind, it was just because we've seen so much of it, I thought it was obviously an interception. I didn't think that it was a direct hit on the airport area, not building. But in fact, I was so surprised because it was that significant a sound. And I thought, wow, well, obviously, whatever else we've seen or heard, people have been indoors. I didn't know, obviously, at that point. I then went running to as you get up, but, you go back into the airport building and there are people saying, go that way, that's your closest shelter. People were huddled in that shelter with alarms going and announcements. So it was quite stressful until it seemed to calm down. And they never really said all clear, but people just suddenly seemed to know when they can start moving about. That was the incident for me yesterday.
I mean, it's interesting because I was the recipient yesterday of the new early warning system. So we have this luxury with missiles that come from Yemen to have a little bit more time to warn people. And I got a little message on my phone and on my watch saying, there will be a siren soon. And I was just about to step out of the door to start driving. And the moment I received that notification, I decided to not drive out. And I stayed home and I was ready to go to the bomb shelter when the sirens eventually sounded, which took about 10 minutes, I think.
That's crazy, because then that's a real failure at Ben Gurion Airport.
So they're a failure on a number of different levels here, because I think that you could have had a little bit more warning. I don't think that anybody for a moment expected that missile to fall. Even when I got that early warning 10 minutes before, I think that there was nobody who believed for a moment that missile was going to fall. And yet it was clearly... Ben Gurion Airport was clearly in the target zone. And so I would have thought that extra 10 minutes would have been really helpful to get you into the secure areas rather than leave you on the airbridge when the missile fell and miraculously missed the terminal building. And I mean, this was real miracle. As I said, there are a number of failures, and unfortunately, they haven't really owned up to all the failures, because we understand that there were attempts to intercept the missile using Israel's Arrows system and using the US deployed THAAD system. All of those somehow didn't manage to hit the target. We don't yet really understand why. We're told that the detection was all done accurately and the technicalities around that were all fine, and the warnings were issued all fine. And yet when it came down to the interceptor actually going off and hitting the target, that's the moment when everything kind of fell over, and the missile somehow created a crater in an open grassy area quite near to the terminal building. And it could have been a big disaster, because if people were not in the secure areas, and clearly you were not in a secure area when the missile fell, then that could have created death and injury. Whereas if you are in your secure areas, then you would probably have a sore toe or a bloody nose or something, or a little bit of shell shock, but not a great deal more than that, because the secure areas are really quite effective in taking care of these things, even though they're not necessarily luxurious and they don't offer you a buffet while you're in there.
Yes, it was a bit crowded, I felt.
But at least once you're in that area, it's pretty secure. So the missile fell, of course, it has major repercussions, because immediately a number of international airlines decided to cancel their flights, either for the foreseeable future. Some of them have said until next week sometime. Others have said they're not, they're just cancelling without a date being set to return. So that has a major economic impact on Israel and has a major diplomatic and international impact. The president of Cyprus was due to have come from Cyprus to visit Israel yesterday and was kept on the runway in Cyprus while all of this was happening. He did eventually arrive and made his state visit, was entertained and hosted by President Isaac Herzog and the Prime Minister as well yesterday. So that actually did go ahead. But it has major repercussions economically and diplomatically when the airport is shown to be vulnerable. And the airport is vulnerable because we know that it's a major target. And yet there are major security systems and protection systems that are specially designed to take care of the airport, knowing full well that it is vulnerable and it is a key target. So all of that failed yesterday, and we got away extremely lucky, miraculous. Everybody will decide what they want to decide about how these miracles happen in the Holy Land, but that clearly was one of them. And then the diplomatic repercussions begin because, of course, President Trump came out with a very, very strongly worded statement blaming not only the Houthis in Yemen, but also blaming Iran for supporting the Houthis and threatening Iran with the support that they are giving to the Houthis. And effectively, Iran has been playing a somewhat duplicitous role and act by, on the one hand, negotiating with the U.S. for a nuclear agreement, a JCPOA-2, whatever you want to call it. These negotiations have taken place over the last 3 weeks, and yet at the same time supporting the Houthis in firing missiles not only against Israel but also towards U.S. warships that are located in the Red Sea area. So that's extremely duplicitous in my view in terms of the way that the Iranians have been playing this. And I don't think that is coincidental that the Iranians decided to call off the last round of negotiations that were due to have taken place on Saturday. No proper reason has been given as to why that round of negotiations was called off. But it is a little strange that on the one hand, President Trump has said, oh, there will be a deal. The Iranians want to make a deal. Perhaps the Iranians don't want to not make a deal. I don't know how he effectively wanted to say it, but he was quite determined that there would be some sort of a deal. But at the same time, the U.S. forces every night are attacking targets in Yemen, Houthi targets, fully supported by Iran, and knowingly, in other words, there's no secret about it. And of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday took the opportunity to come out and to threaten Iran and the Houthis as well, to jump onto that statement made by President Trump. And of course, in the background, we've got the Mike Waltz affair going on, where Mike Waltz was the senior security advisor to the president and who was involved in that strange message about attacks against Yemen that went out in the public and notified people about very, very secret U.S. military activities. And then a couple of weeks after that particular incident was moved away from his role as senior security advisor, and it was announced that he would become the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, which effectively was firing him as the U.S. senior security advisor. And it now turns out that the main reason why Trump decided to fire him was because he, behind Trump's back, had been dealing with Prime Minister Netanyahu in order to somehow put together a plan to attack Iran. So he was not necessarily representing the U.S. administration's formal view about attack against Iran, but clearly representing the U.S. in some way by dealing with the prime minister. And we understand that that was really what led to him being fired as the senior security advisor. So all of this kind of creates a huge fruit salad of the situation, because exactly what's going to happen next, nobody really knows. But clearly things are in turmoil right now with regard to the Houthis. Mm. They've been attacked for nearly 2 months, and yet they're still firing these missiles at us. What's been going on? Why is the U.S. not taking care of them a little bit more stringently to prevent these missiles from being fired here? Whatever they've done up until now seems not to have helped very much. Why is Iran being allowed to negotiate with the U.S. while still supporting the Houthis? Lots and lots of questions to be asked,
as though,
and very few answers.
Is there a chance that that Trump has been played here by the Iranians?
Quite possibly. quite possibly. Others are saying that maybe Trump has been playing the Iranians by negotiating with them in order to try to show somehow that he's willing to come to the table. At least he's made an effort before the attack comes. Why would they have then fired Mike Waltz for negotiating with the prime minister on potential attacks against Iran? There are a lot of different pieces in this puzzle which don't necessarily fit, you know, smoothly together. And I think that, you know, we'll only become wiser over time. But at the moment, a lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah, it's really quite unbelievable how it went. Suddenly, everything is escalating and almost becoming much more focused once again. So Israel has attacked numerous Syrian targets, Syrian government and military targets in defense of the attacks against the Druze in Syria. So what's the current situation there?
Well, the current situation on the Syrian border is that things are very uneasy. Not because Israel feels threatened at all by the Syrian forces. I don't think that the Syrian forces are really much of a match for Israel, but I don't think that Israel really wanted to open a front with Syria. But when this massacre against the Druze took place at the end of last week, Israel was somehow felt obliged to intervene. And exactly why Israel feels obliged to intervene on behalf of the Druze is still a question that is not 100% easy to answer. I mean, it's easy for us to say we know that Druze communities were divided up when the borders were drawn after the Six-Day War. We know that some Druze fell into Israel and some Druze fell into Syria. Members of the same community, members of the same family were separated by this border that was simply drawn across and separated the Druze between Israel and Syria in the Golan. The Druze in Israel have been very loyal to Israel, have served in the army, and the Israeli government has come to the Druze community in Israel to say, we will help you, we will protect you, knowing full well that the Druze could potentially be targets by Sunni Muslims who have now clearly taken control of Syria. And Israel has, for many, many years, undertaken to help and to protect the Druze. And we've seen that in the last few weeks much more significantly when the Druze have become under threat. So there were quite a number of different operations that took place, Air Force attacks against Syrian targets last week, all of which were in the name of defending the Druze in Syria. And Israel's opened its borders to allow Druze who were injured to come to Israeli hospitals. There's been talk about a field hospital being set up on the northern border in order to deal with the Druze. Israeli government field hospital that will be set up with Israeli funding to help deal with the Druze. So all of this is quite interesting, but I don't think it really makes the Syrian border less stable than it was before. I don't think the Syrian forces would dare to try and carry out attacks against Israel. I think that that would be something that they would live to regret.
That is where we leave it. That's all we have time for, unfortunately. Anthony Wright, thank you as always for the Israel Report. We can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.